call this meeting to order at 9:30-ish. Put an ish on there, just for the sake of the time here. And if we could just get a roll call, please.
Andrew Everode.
Here.
Peter Leeds.
Present.
Jason Madison.
Here.
David Swartz.
Here.
Paul Sterren.
Here.
Leo Corum.
Thank you. All right. Is there anyone from the public here?
There's no one from the public, but I want to introduce Scott Donald. He's the AG for the board, and I asked him to come today to just talk about the EAC severity ratings and proceeding with allegations, violations found in the course of an investigation.
Perfect.
Yeah, I just thought that he might be useful to you in those discussions.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. So let's have the record reflect that there were no members of the public in attendance. And now, agenda item number 4 is adoption of the minutes. This would be from February 2018. I was reading this over, and apparently I said something about HB 2507, and it's not coming to mind what that was that could have had an effect on us.
Well, the interesting thing is Scott was reading the agenda and looked at 2507, which has nothing to do with us whatsoever.
So I'm wondering if that's...
So we're not sure why it's on
that
there.
Jumped out at me. Okay, that came from our... Oh, let's see. No. That's actually on our agenda today, too, to talk about, right?
Yeah, so we it's a mystery to me.
Is it possible to pull up a fact sheet on that? Well,
I don't think I can get in.
Is it possible that you just wanted to put it on the next agenda?
It said...
dead bill.
It is dead?
It's dead. I never even got through committee.
It's
not the home builders one. We don't know.
It might have been. It was introduced by Mr. Mitchell. I can look it up for you real quick.
He's born to their own sides.
Did you hear what Scott was saying?
Issues.
Yeah. So it is a dead bill.
That pretty much ends it. It looks like we did talk about it because it's in my notes from last meeting too. And then something just happened. How about the discussion of temporary assistance from, say, a contractor to do report reviews? And I know we had talked, what does it say in there about the logical pay or any of that? We didn't really define it, did we?
Net of 25.
Okay. That's good. And then I think that'll be on our agenda today, right?
Yes, it is.
Yes. Okay, good. All right. Does anybody see anything else?
Were there any revisions?
There's not.
Then, Mr. Chairman, I make a motion we accept the minutes as written.
And a second.
Is there any discussion? Hearing none, is there any opposition to the motion? Motion passes to adopt the minutes from February of 2018. Agenda item 5A, legislative updates on SB 1045 and HB 2507. And it sounds like 2507 is a non-issue.
Yes.
So SB 1045, at least I can report on that it did pass, the governor signed it, and it's dependent on the adjournment of the legislature. It will take effect late July or early August in all likelihood. Once we do that, do we take action, does the board take action to notify the schools that fingerprinting has changed? Because
yes.
I think in my notes it said that actually the old fingerprint cards will not be accepted. So as soon as that date, it's over.
What happened with alarms and will probably happen here is there'll be like a little lapse in time between when this law takes effect and DPS is ready to start processing clearance cards. So there'll be like a little lapse of time where we stop accepting applications with alarms. It was 2 or 3 weeks. It shouldn't be any worse for home inspectors. But once this law goes into effect, we can't take cards anymore. Once the law goes into effect, before the law goes into effect, we can't take the clearance cards. So, so right now, people are stuck on one side or the other. We'll probably start telling people it would probably be faster for you to wait until the clearance card law goes through. But we'll meet with DPS first to find out what their time frame is going to be so we can avoid any holdups. It went pretty smoothly with alarms. There was, like I said, maybe 2 to 3 week holdup, and then it zipped right on through.
Will there need to be some information on the website directionally?
We will put it on the website. We'll send out notices. Probably what we did with alarms was the firms, and we can send it to the schools. We'll put it on our Facebook. We'll
and it may work out with the timing of the newsletter, potentially, right?
Yes, I actually think there's a very short blurb right now about that.
Okay.
But we can I can update it because yeah. make it actually, oh, it has passed, so please look forward to this in about 6 months' time, or whatever it might be.
Right. Yeah, the only complicated part is DPS can't necessarily tell us until we get really close to that date. So we just, what we did with alarms is just we did like 3 different mailings. So people knew it was coming, it was coming, it was coming, oh, it's here.
I think we did a mass emailing as well.
Yeah. We won't need to do quite the same thing. Alarms, they have to do it every year. They had to do it every year. I know they have to do it every 3 years. Home inspectors only have to do it as applicants.
Okay. Thank you. Is there any more discussion on that? Okay, we just kept this on the agenda because it was a pressing matter with the legislature in session and at least one bill that we were wanting to babysit, so we could probably get this off the agenda since that's taken care of. For future agenda.
I would like to compliment Rory Hayes. She worked very, very hard on this bill. We had some troubles with Mr. Peterson, and it would not have gone through without her.
Yeah, we're very lucky to have her.
Yeah.
I do have a brief legislative update, not related to either of these bills, when it's if it's appropriate.
What do we think
about?
We
can agendize it
the next. Mm-hmm. Because it's not on the
since
agenda.
Since we put these two bills. We should have put EG.
That's fine. Nothing nothing too burning. I was just going to give you guys an update on something.
We can talk after the meeting. It might be something we could just update. If it's just an update
okay,
that
that's
we
fine.
Can, staff could send out.
Yeah, good thought. Okay. Agenda item 5B is rules change update.
We submitted the final rule package to GERC. We're waiting to hear. What generally happens once we submit it to GERC is GERC staff looks at it and they chop it up a bit and they want us to make changes or they ask us questions. The new GERC staff is less likely to do that than the old GERC staff, so I'm hopeful that we will not have the long, painful process. But at this point, we haven't heard back from them yet. It's not a fast process once it gets to the final rulemaking. They review it, we make the changes they suggest, or we answer their questions. Then it goes to the GERC committee for them to ask questions. And then after that, if they're all good with it, it goes to the GERC committee for its final review and approval. So it's going to be a little while, but we are in the shoot now.
And no dates are set for any of those meetings, right?
Not yet. We did not get any public comment. There's a public comment period once the proposed rulemaking is published. We did not receive any public comment during that period.
Okay. But you can let, if you would let me know whenever some of these meetings are scheduled, I'll make myself available or one of us will cover that so that we have somebody representing.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much. Okay, that one might need to stay on the agenda, it sounds like. So as far as time projections go, what do we have any projection? In the past, we've had rules packages go quickly. And this one, not so much.
This one will probably, keep in mind it's a very big rules package that covers a number of different areas.
Mm-hmm.
I still think it will go quickly because it really was just technical corrections for the most part. The only part I see really any issues arising have to do with some fees that are changing, simply because this is a time in which fees are scrutinized heavily. even then, this is a much more laid-back group staff than what we've had in the past, so I'm hopeful it'll be pretty quickly. I'll follow up with Chris Eckert and just make sure they've got it and they're looking at it and if we know where it's at.
Is it probable completion 3 months, 6 months?
I'm hopeful with 3 months.
3 months?
I really don't see why they would sit on it a very long time.
Okay. I'm going to write, but don't worry, I'm not.
That's okay.
Because you have no control there.
The reason it took a little bit of time to get it over there is we have to write an economic impact statement, and because of the fees, it was quite extensive, and simply with everything else, it took a while to get it together.
Okay. Fees regarding?
We're changing some of the kind of generic fees, cost for copying, for lists.
Oh, for the registrants?
These are like public records fees.
Oh, okay, internal.
That type of thing.
Okay.
Nothing to do with licensing
okay.
or applications.
Okay. Any more discussion on that topic?
Negative.
Hearing none, we'll move along. And just as a heads up, we'll probably keep that on the agenda, 5B. 5C is revision to EAC severity ratings. That sounds like Peter's expertise.
I think I have everybody's comments in there. Change the title to Enforcement Advisory Committee Severity Ratings Guidelines. And changed the system, but we'll talk about that in a minute. And changed the note at the end to say that the committee may choose a less severe or more severe rating based on the evidence accumulated if the committee deems it the rating more appropriate. Okay? Now, the way the old severity ratings were reading, they were giving specific examples of things that were wrong as examples of where they should fall in here. However, I looked at it and many of them crossed over from one rating to another, and also it kind of held that the committee tight to putting a specific problem into a specific rating. So I changed the whole parameter to five different areas that concern me based upon my inclination as to what's important and what's not important. And the first one, of course, would be the clerical error, which we've all just talked about and we all agree upon. The second one was the description, a component description that was missed, that wasn't in a complaint, description being the type of something. The third one being an observation being more important than a description that was missed but wasn't part of a complaint. The fourth one being a description or an observation that was missed that is part of a complaint, and the fifth one being a description or an observation of an item that actually resulted in a severe financial burden or a safety hazard. I think that giving the committee leeway to discuss these and put them where they belong based upon the appropriate evidence that was accumulated, I think that we have it this time. Any comments?
I like it a lot. Yeah, I like it too, Peter. I think the latitude regarding the guidelines component is important. We know that we get a report in here and the whole report is under scrutiny, and the complaint may just be for a small little piece of that, and then once we see the report, we see many other issues with it that might step up the severity rating, even though there is not a complaint on that component,
right,
if you will.
I agree.
And so that factors into assessing the severity, you know, in my opinion. So,
which is a really good point, because you're bringing the severity based upon the committee's ability to move the rating, you're bringing it up. In all my thinking, I was always bringing it down. So
yeah, and assessing severity, is it complaint-related or is it report-related, and that balance, right?
Right.
There's two components, mm-hmm, right, of it. So, but I like what you did. I think it's great,
yeah,
and I think the revisions are great, and I think it'll be, you know, functional. It may need to get tweaked, you know, future. But thanks for putting that together.
So on 1B, the agreement is incomplete.
On 1B,
what do you?
There are requirements of the agreement that are.
Okay.
Not
the biggest problem I'm seeing with agreements is that it's one-sided.
Okay.
Okay, these guys are putting together agreements that only the client is signing. Okay, they're not signing it. There's no place on the agreement at all for them to sign.
Gotcha.
And in my education, I've learned that agreements are two-sided. And you don't have a contract unless it is two-sided, and therefore the contracts are null and void if I don't see this guy on the agreement himself. Agreements have got to be contracts.
There's
got to
be consideration.
For both parties. Yep.
And you're saying the provider's signature is absolutely critical to that contract?
Yes.
I don't believe that to be true, but you experts can...
If you're writing up an agreement or a contract with a client to do a home inspection, should the home inspector be on that agreement? Or his company?
Signing. Or can they be named?
I mean, how do you... The agreement's coming, emanating from the company.
Right.
With the company's name all over it.
Yeah, so Valley does it and says, here's our agreement.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You do a lot of work in the, you know, there's a lot of contracting that goes on that is an agreement that contains the company name, might contain the technician doing the work, but I don't, you know, we're not getting signatures on all those all the time.
Same thing with the termite report. There's a place for it, but nobody signs a termite report.
Well, I think it would be difficult if a dispute came up for you to dispute as the home inspection company is like, oh, I didn't, you know,
yeah.
I didn't do this contract or I didn't agree to this contract.
Kind
it's
of
like, it's your
it.
Contract.
Yeah.
The agreement being incomplete are more those, they did not refer to the Arizona standards, or there's some requirements that our rules or our standards have of the agreement, and people often miss it. Registrants miss that a lot.
Now, what would you put a severity rating agreement incomplete, but we see them all the time where the homeowner never signed, you know, never agreed.
Well, now that's a standards problem.
So that would jump. You would think that would jump up in the
rating.
That would be like an
omission.
That's like a one.
You would still say that as a one. Okay.
Yeah, that would be the report included a space for something that wasn't included.
So I think the concern would be more on that end of it than the home inspection company signing it.
Me too.
The client signing, not signing it.
Absolutely.
Because I know we see those sometimes where like a realtor will call out a home inspector and, you know, nothing's ever done. It doesn't seem like there's ever an agreement between the buyer and the home inspector, officially.
Well, so, it has to be.
Well, I don't want to get into all the legalese, and Scott, you tell me if I'm misstating anything. The lack of a signature by one party doesn't necessarily invalidate the agreement. It might take it out of a written agreement to a verbal agreement. And you might start looking at things like course of conduct. You know, Valley sends out something, homeowner signs it, still do what the terms say you're going to do,
Andrew,
they pay you.
But you just said by taking it out of a written agreement to an oral agreement, now we don't meet the standards, because the standards require the home inspector to enter into a written agreement.
Well,
specifically.
This is a matter for the civil court system, is it not?
Yeah,
go ahead.
If they begin performance under it, if you have a company come out and a representative has a client sign a contract, the representative of the company doesn't sign the contract, but the company then performs, that contract effectively, again, this is something a civil courts would handle, but that's something that the company would be held to that contract.
All right.
All
right. So as an example, we'll take the signature out. But we'll say that he forgot to put his firm address into the contract, or he forgot to put the date on the contract, or all these different things that our contracts require according to the standards. That's what item number one is supposed to be protecting.
Okay. Yeah,
no,
I understand.
Yeah, and anything required under the standards,
Right. Yeah, and I would think as a board, I mean, if that was the only problem that you saw, like there's allegations, you know, they weren't substantiated. The only thing was, that would be like a letter of concern kind of thing, or, you know, nothing. Just be like, do this, you know, take care of it, you know, kind of thing.
So I just pulled a bad example.
Okay.
Although I beat up a lot of applications.
Speaking of agreement, real quick, as I'm getting up to speed here, It used to be that the client did not have to sign the agreement according to our rules, that it has to be a signed agreement before releasing the report. It could be the realtor.
It could be an agent of the, and once again, that would be a civil court issue.
Right, but it does not have to be the actual client.
Our rules are simply that we have to have a signed agreement.
It doesn't even have to say an agent, statutory agent, anything else. It could be somebody's brother-in-law.
If you wanted to stretch it, you could have had the neighbor sign.
Right.
Okay.
Right. That's just the way
it
is written.
We left it that ambiguous.
Which, you know, scares me a little bit, but...
Well, we left it that way purposely.
Yeah, I know.
So pretty much so that the agents could sign it, and we didn't have to fight that back.
Right, and that's not a good business decision, but it satisfies the state requirements. I understand. Okay.
And then I just want to make a point here. I don't know that it requires any clarification or anything, but just hopefully this is in agreement. The higher level ones, 4 and 5, on occasion we have processed complaints where, say, a photograph in the report initiates an additional allegation because we see that there's evidence now that they missed something else that the client has, the alleger, he doesn't even know about, but as experts we spot it and he did not address it as a defect. So we're not saying here that it must be a complaint or allegation from the alleger. The committee itself can create a new allegation.
As a complaint,
sure. Yeah.
From the state.
So I think it's still fine the way it reads, just so that as it's being administered, you know, the committee itself can create a brand new one based on what they see
right. In
the process.
We do that often.
I think Mr. Parlin's had a different experience with the committee.
Well, I mean, my only concern is that the way this is set up, and you did a great job, Peter. I'm just trying to understand it and based on what you said. The allegations that are received with the original complaint seem to be tied to these things. If it's something that's a condition that wasn't reported on in the allegation, it seems to carry more weight than if it's something that's found during the investigation through an assessment process. But to me, it could be still as severe, whether it's because, as you said, the client might not know the difference.
Exactly. Yes, and that's why with the last paragraph is in here, giving the committee the option to realize the severity and give it a higher rating.
That's one of the things I actually asked Mr. Donald to talk about, deficiencies versus allegations versus violations.
Yeah, and I actually was, in looking at this, I have the same concern as Doug. And hearing you explain it, if I understand correctly, the committee's interpretation of the difference between 3 and 4 essentially a 4, is that if I have a home inspection done and I see 3 things that are wrong, that strike me as being wrong, and I report them, and the home inspector is brought in, and the committee reviews the situation, the 3 things that looked wrong to me, the committee would grade under up to 3. But if the committee saw something in there, in the picture, they saw something that, wow, that's terrible, and I didn't know it, but you saw it, that would then appear under this, that could then go up to a level 4. Hmm. But what, if I understand the committee correctly, what you're saying is that actually, in that circumstance, if the committee identifies the problem, then that becomes an allegation that brings it up to a level 4, is that correct?
That's not correct. It could be either way. It could be what the alleger brought up was found to be substantiated and significant, and it can rise anywhere in here, rise or fall anywhere within this. What the committee finds during the investigative process and the process of the EAC meeting can rise or fall anywhere in there as well.
And also, what the committee finds is generally noted as a deficiency. The allegations we keep in a certain category above, at the top of the brief, coming from the client himself. Anything that we discover during the process, we include in deficiencies at the bottom of the sheet. So the process being the assessment as well as the committee meeting. So during the assessment, the assessor, if he finds things wrong with the inspection report based upon the evidence provided, he's not adding to allegations, he's adding to deficiencies.
Not always, though. Let me give you an example. We've done one, and some home inspectors, in this case, I believe it was just a general picture of the attic. So they get in the attic, take a picture, and there's an open electrical splices, unsafe, in the attic, fire hazard. And so in doing the process, there's no mention of that in the inspection report. So we kind of add it as an additional allegation. It's not a reporting deficiency. It's an allegation of a failure to identify a defect in the home. It's not a report. We actually have two categories. The report failed to meet the standards of reporting, and there are problems with this house that you are expected to identify and you did not. And those generally are in the allegation side.
I disagree. And I've done many of these meetings. We have never added to an allegation. It has always gone down on the bottom of the
list. Well, that's categorization. I don't know that anybody cares, but...
It makes a big difference. The allegation actually comes from outside the industry. It comes from the client.
The reason I'm a little concerned about this is just because from a legal standpoint, the only way the committee can possibly get into any kind of trouble is by having results that can be perceived as inconsistent from committee to committee. Mm. And the problems, well, first off, the fact that actually right now the discussion's going on and there's disagreement about how that's interpreted, definitely there's something we need to touch base on. But also, in doing standards, or in setting this up, the guidelines, I would caution the committee to make sure that they take into consideration that the composition of the committee is going to change over time. So while you guys may read this a certain way and understand it a certain way, the fact that we walked into it and read it and looked at it as possibly being another way, we might want to clarify that so that future committees can apply it in the same fashion as you guys, because it seems there's some misunderstanding about how the committee is applying this. And it doesn't matter how the committee applies it, as long as they do it uniformly across everybody. And you know, if there's a problem with the house, it's handled the same way every single time. Whether it's somebody complains about it, or you guys, using your experience, look at it and say, there's a problem. The consumer, just being a guy off the street, wouldn't be expected to know about. But that electrical box in the attic would be given the same severity rating, based upon what it is as opposed to how it was discovered.
Right. Part of the problem is without this, there's less consistency.
Right.
I think. Mm-hmm. So this is an attempt to make the decisions more consistent.
Oh, absolutely.
And I know there was some discussion previously about calling this a policy as opposed to now guidelines.
Right.
In order to, we could call it, hey, EAC, here are some things to think about.
Right.
Don't get me wrong.
Can I interject?
Awesome.
Yeah.
Is
this a good time to decide whether or not, if we find something dramatic in an inspection report, that we make it an allegation?
Well, let me ask. Mm-hmm. So that's a question that I want to ask you, because I'm thinking about what we do at the board level. There are allegations that get investigated. If during the course of the investigation we find another deficiency, I don't think we can add that as a new allegation. We can, or you agree with me?
Absolutely. Yeah. The board can initiate.
Based on anything
the board discovers, they can act upon.
But if they find a new one, they then have to give the respondent the opportunity to address it, right?
And if I can also interject, there's a person in the system called the alleger. So now, if the committee is going to be the alleger, do we now have to have two allegers in the system, or are we still working with deficiencies?
It would still work the same way in the system. For example, if you have you get a complaint you receive a bunch of documentary evidence, you look at that stuff, you're deciding about calling somebody in for an interview, and you see three things that are wrong. You call them in for the interview, you hit everything, you've got the allegations, the stuff that you guys have discovered, you can talk to them about any of that stuff. You can do future interviews with them as well. You want to collect as much information as possible in order to make the best decision moving forward, because once you give the information to the board, if the board decides to proceed with a complaint notice of hearing, that's something that has distinct legal implications for the registrant. So you want to make sure you've got everything, you know, as much information together as possible to make the most informed decision you can. You can absolutely talk to the registrant about stuff that you discover in the course of the investigation. The board can act upon that information, and it doesn't become a separate complaint. It's all under the initial complaint.
But my question is it an allegation or is it a deficiency? We really need
realistically,
to
know. You guys would just need to define those terms. You can use allegations and deficiencies. You just need to make sure you define them and you have them so that the guidelines incorporate those definitions.
Wouldn't it just be a violation of the standard practice?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, instead of saying allegation deficiency, because you guys have a set of rules.
But the problem is...
I want to say something, too.
One second. The problem is moving it from 3 to 4, okay? 4 means it's part of an allegation, okay? So if the committee wanted to move this up to an allegation, the bottom paragraph gives them the right to do that, to move it up to a number 4 without it being an allegation. But my question is simply... Is it a deficiency or an allegation? And I have never in any of the committees seen an addition to an allegation, always to deficiencies.
We are done writing reports and defining that anymore anyway. So that's a matter for this agency to sort out. We don't write all that anymore.
Well, and I can tell you, investigations for everybody else, if it's found in the course of an investigation, it's another allegation and they're given opportunity to respond to it. It's not a deficiency. It's anything found in the course of an investigation, you know, could be a violation of law, and they're given an opportunity to respond. So home inspectors are doing it a bit different than everybody else.
Hmm. And you could always use a blanket term like potential violation as opposed to allegations and deficiencies. So everything's going to fall into the category. It's either a potential violation or it's not.
And that would be whoever's writing the report is sorting that out, right. Not us.
What's being decided at these EAC meetings is whether or not a violation of standard has occurred, whether that rule has been violated. And if it has, how has it been violated? Right. And that includes findings from the committee that there's merit to the allegations. And to me, just as importantly, that the committee has found that these deficiencies exist in the report, because it's all about the report and it's all about the standards, whether it's an allegation or a deficiency.
Yeah, I think I don't quite understand, you know, if there is a violation of the standard of practice, why we'd give more weight to it if the homeowner found it as opposed to the home inspector find it, because homeowners are ignorant a lot of times they're looking for.
The reason why is simply because the homeowner now has probably spent a lot of money on something. You see? And I feel that that's more important than if the homeowner didn't spend a lot of money.
The problem there is that you're making an assumption about the situation that the homeowner is in, and that assumption then is going to lead to different results from the committee, and you don't really have the empirical evidence that there actually was that cost, and the guy who didn't discover it is still going to have that cost, because he's going to find out about it once the committee tells him, hey, this happened, so he's going to have the same cost anyway. It's sort of like if the Phoenix police are called out to a murder investigation because there's a body found, it's going to be exactly the same as if a police officer pulls somebody over for speeding and for whatever reason does a search in the vehicle and finds a dead body in the trunk. It's still going to be a murder investigation. It doesn't matter how that was discovered. It's still going to have the exact same severity to it. And that's where the committee can get into trouble if they start kind of assuming that the homeowner might be in a worse position in this case than he would be in this case, and then making it more severe. The guy who didn't have the savvy to discover it on his own is automatically being discriminated against in terms of severity rating compared to the other guy.
So could you just change this instead of complaint or allegation, just violation of standard of practice? I mean, that's kind of the whole crux of the thing. I mean, either they violated the rules or they didn't. I mean, when it comes right down to it, right? I mean,
well,
when you guys review the reports and do the AACs and everything else, you look for violations of, you know, what was, you know, what, you know, this needed to be addressed, this needed to be addressed, kind of thing.
I think just the nomenclature needs to be defined.
We do have that in 2 and 3, you see? So what are we going to do with number 4? If we take out the resulting in a complaint or allegation, I suppose we can divide number 4 and 5 up as for one being a severe financial burden and another being a safety hazard. 4 could be a severe financial burden, 5 could be a safety hazard. Because what we're doing right now is we're actually talking about 2 and 3. You know, if we can't distinguish between whether it's an allegation coming in from outside or not, which I understand because that makes good sense, then we got to take resulting in a complaint or allegation right out of the system.
Right, and that puts 3 and 4 as basically the same.
That means we've eliminated 4.
Yeah, I think you eliminate 4 and then you take out the phrase not resulting in
complaint
number 2 and 3.
Not resulting, we can pull that out of 2 and 3.
Get rid
of 4. And then we can divide 5 up to number 4 being a severe financial burden and number 5 being a safety hazard. Would that work for everyone?
Do you need it? Could, do you need?
Well, we don't need 5.
Yeah.
I tried to get 4 ratings.
Well, I think, from, you know, things that I do, you know, for safety things, I think the life safety thing is the highest it should be.
Right.
You know, financial burden, okay, someone has a crappy roof and it leaks and they have to replace their drywall and it costs them, you know, $3,000 or whatever. Okay.
We've had people lose their house.
Right.
They bought a train wreck.
And well,
and
that would
inspector
be
did not do
right.
A good
now that'd
job.
Be a severe financial burden.
Yeah, so
you know,
it's all over the map. The goal today for me is to. We have an upcoming EAC member class. If we want to print this out and redline it and get it, I'd love to have something out of this committee today, so we have it ready for them.
Okay. Then I propose that we eliminate.
Do we
resulting in a complaint or allegation and divide number 5 up into 4. 4 and 5.
You ready? Yeah.
We'll take the financial burden and make it a less severe rating than a safety hazard. Would that work?
That's fine.
And then we don't have to worry about allegations and deficiencies or where we throw them during a committee meeting.
So losing your house
since
is not as severe as getting a broken leg?
Well, no, but I think, you know, that's where the discretion comes in. I mean, you know.
I'm fine with all that.
And then
can we get a printed version and use this pen and get it dialed in so you guys have it? Or do you want to take notes? Would you rather take notes of the changes?
Correct.
No. That's what I thought.
I mean, and do you want to take out that separation between allegation and deficiency since we've kind of talked about that carried
violation?
But that's
a violation.
Or possible violation.
Possible violation?
That's not in here, though. As far as deficiencies go, I don't think that we have deficiencies as a word in here at all.
So an allegation's going to get pulled.
An allegation's going to get
stretched. It's in the top. It's in the top.
Is it in the top?
Yeah.
Submitted. Oh, I see. Okay.
So the not resulting in complaint or allegation would kind of strike in that from everything. So it would be, and then change it to potential violation or something to that.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Is this a PDF?
About to get a hard copy.
It is a PDF.
And you're about to use this.
Oh, boy.
I guess
because it is important that this get done today.
Yeah, well, one legal question that comes to mind is that when someone has their report reviewed because of a complaint and allegation, and then we find 5 additional things, and those additional deficiencies are shared with the complainant, we're really fueling the flame for a civil suit. Or a larger one potentially, and maybe that's just the way it is. Maybe that's life in the big city, but we, you know, that does happen, and we are fueling that flame right
what,
there.
What would the civil suit be? Because he didn't have time to respond.
Because now
no.
there's bigger issues.
Yeah.
Now there's bigger issues than they
thought. Oh, I see.
The alleger going against the respondent.
Yeah.
And so when they're done with the BTR,
right.
Then they're going to move on and sue the guy.
Well, you should have that right.
Absolutely.
You should have that right.
One with 34 reporting deficiencies. It was just, wow, the most I'd ever seen.
So the alleger's now living in the home inspector's house.
Maybe.
That's like our personal best right there.
It really was astonishing. You were there, right?
Yeah, you were there.
So they can be that bad, and then that would be have to be sorted out. Civil. I don't know if we all need it. Peter needs one because he's got a red pen in hand.
Thank you.
But we can, no, I think we all need it.
We do?
Yeah, because I'm passing out red pen.
Peter, but you have done amazing work.
Thank you.
I mean, from where this started to where it is, this is awesome. And it started well.
We do want to start on the top with for substantiated and change the words allegation and deficiencies. What's the best recommendation on that?
For substantiated deficiencies. I mean, that's what you're concluding, is that there is a deficiency.
Right. It starts with an allegation.
But Doug had a better way of saying it.
Oh, how'd you say it, Doug?
Proposed violations?
Potential violations?
Yeah, violation.
Potential violation of standard of practice, right?
Well, I don't think you want to say potential because you're saying it's substantiated.
Okay. Oh, okay.
So alleged.
For substantiated violations of the SOP?
Just violations, period.
I think, yeah.
Just violations?
Yeah, because this is already part of the inspector rules and standards.
Substantiated violations.
Violations.
Scott's got a suggestion.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
You can actually even simplify it, just eliminate the entire four substantiated allegations and deficiencies and insert the word investigation between committee and severity.
Enforcement advisory investigation committee investigation.
Enforcement Advisory Committee investigation severity rating guidelines. Eliminate for substantiated allegations and deficiencies. You don't even have to worry about the question.
Good point.
And kill the third line. So it's going to read Enforcement Advisory Committee investigation severity rating guidelines. Is that right?
Say it again.
Enforcement Advisory Committee Enforcement Advisory Committee investigation severity rating guidelines. Yes?
Yeah, I like that.
Mm-hmm. All right, number one, no changes? Number two, no changes?
Well, number two at the end.
Oh.
Right?
Yeah, and take out the not resulting in a complaint or allegation.
Right.
Number three, A, not resulting, and B, not resulting. We'll take those out. Okay? Okay, number four. This would be resulting in a severe financial burden. Is that true? Instead of a complaint or allegation, we're going to take those out. We're going to put in resulting in a severe financial burden to start with.
I guess the big question there
is what's severe?
Well, I always thought that when I was writing it too, but it just... A financial burden doesn't work, and I went to my thesaurus looking for better words this year, and I couldn't find it.
I think the good thing is that prompts the discussion.
Right.
I mean, this process inherently has severity ratings, so you've got to make decisions regarding severity anyway.
Yeah. Well, so that's true.
But I like your comment, though, that it's intended to prompt discussion on some of these if you're going to kind of stray from these general guidelines.
Yes, I agree with that. Okay, so we're good with that on the striking out resulting in a complaint or allegation in both cases to read resulting in a severe financial burden.
And then the next one's going to be safety?
Yeah.
So then that's going to make things like a open splices in an attic. That's not a severe, that's very cheap to fix. It just automatically,
but it's a lot
those
of safety
are
thing.
Fives now?
Well, no, then your committee starts to debate that. Now, I've had this discussion with Doug about safety reversing mechanism. I censor safety reversing mechanisms at overhead doors, all right? Especially since, 2 months ago, fire department door came down in Mesa on, I think it was Mesa, on Killed a Child at a fire department of all places, okay? But we can't make that a five because the chances of that happening are really low, all right? It happens, but it doesn't, it's not really that serious. It didn't happen, in essence. Should we see a report that says that they didn't test that or they forgot to talk about it? It didn't happen, okay? So I don't see how we can make that a five, even though it really is a severe, what are we calling it, a safety hazard. But we have to take into consideration in the committee the chances of things happening as well, and whether or not they did happen and stuff like that.
Right.
It would, if somebody came down and a child broke his arm underneath there, that would be a five, okay? But since
the way it reads now, what's wrong with the way it reads now?
Which is it? How does it read?
The way it reads four and five right now, today, the way you brought it into this fine building.
Well, one was, four was...
It still allows flexibility, and it focuses that when it's high cost and it's dangerous, that prompts the committee to start thinking about whether it rises to that level of a five.
So we'd still get rid of four. You just keep five as one, and that becomes the new four.
The new
as is.
Maybe so.
We wanted to get rid of the resulting complaint or allegation because
four becomes,
because then you're putting it on the ledger to decide if it's bad or not.
But the thing I said was the committee can create a new one.
Okay,
so if the committee can create a new one based on what their findings are, then we keep four.
If the committee's findings can be considered allegations, then we could do this.
Right. Then we leave it as is.
But would it be an allegation? Because
but in that case, three and two would not make any sense.
Right.
Because then you wouldn't be able to assign a rating to them because you wouldn't be finding any potential violation. Because if you had found a potential violation, you then would have just created an allegation.
Right.
I think if you find them on your own, it's still going to fall in two or three.
Right. And so
it's either going to be a type or a condition.
So I'm thinking that the best way to do this, and I know it's going to be radical, but I come from a radical generation, is to eliminate the five ratings system and use a four. That's what I do in my report. Eliminate four completely, leave five as it is, forget about allegations, and I think we have all our bases.
You can't leave three saying not resulting in a... Yeah, I'd be okay with that.
Then if you've got a bunch of problems, regardless of how they were initiated, you treat them the same.
Yeah. And, you know, like you were saying with the electrical wires and open electrical wires, okay, it might only cost 50 cents to go get a cover and put it on it. But if someone's climbing through the attic and puts their hand down on that and dies, and there's a very high potential for that to happen, unlike a garage door opener that doesn't reverse,
right.
You know, if something's covered in insulation or something, I mean, I've been up in attics and got a little jolt from an exposed wire.
When I find that, that's a two on my report. One being the worst rating I give. But I only rate to four.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
One's the worst, though. You're reversed.
Right. I'm
okay.
Reversed. Do you want a new version to do what we just said?
Okay.
He's a rebel.
And then we can hand it off to Kurt.
All right. So, to start again, we're taking out the third line on the doohickey, and right after committee we're inserting investigation. Okay, on the second one there's no changes. Item number two, we're putting a period after incorrectly addressed and taking out resulting, and therefore number three, we're doing the same. After addressed, we're putting periods on A and B and taking out the not resultings. Number four, we're taking the entire paragraph out, and we're changing five to four, and we're leaving it alone. And I think we're there.
Does everybody agree with that?
I agree with that.
Yep.
Good to hear.
And Doug, do you think that'll help in the going through the EACs and stuff?
Yeah, I think so.
Doug's just going to look at the bottom note.
He's just going to give everything full.
Now that one meeting just got very important.
Yeah, right.
What do you think?
Yeah, I think we as long as we can get this instilled in the minds of our rest of our EAC people, which is one of the reasons why we're having this training event.
Right.
And to get this dialed in now so that we can get it out there.
Yeah. I view this as kind of the starting point.
Yeah.
Can we send this to staff and get it written up so that we can approve it now? And
we're going to have a motion in a minute that
If you don't mind my asking all the lawyers, is there any other wording in here that should be changed? Like we changed several earlier in other meetings, and they seem to work much better. Are we happy?
Pretty clear and concise. Yeah. Yeah.
Brief. The challenge here is life safety hazard is very subjective. It could be the windowsill height on a bedroom. It could be just a gap at a B vent and could allow CO into the home.
Does the word life need to be there?
Very subjective.
Yeah, you see, now we still have more questions.
I feel like that's an industry phrase.
Life safety. Life safety.
Yeah. It is important to keep.
I think for the industry.
And I think, you know, and that's the point of having this talking point. If you guys are in an EAC and you're saying, okay, well, right. You know, could someone die from, I mean, someone could die from anything. I mean, oh, there was a loose piece of drywall, and if you were sitting right underneath it and had your eye looking at it and it fell off and went through your eye and into your brain, ooh, you know, but come on.
So the committee's not going to have to decide whether it's life safety versus injury prone.
It's just a general guideline. I mean, life safety would be something like
life safety is a
two-story house with no handrails on the stairs.
Potential for injury, right? Injury to
Something that any logical person would look at and go, "Okay, this is very dangerous."
Right. We don't have to. I don't think we have to define life safety. I think life safety is a common phrase like sunset.
Yeah, I think, I think people are going to understand. And that there are certain things that are very dangerous. And there's certain things that aren't.
It's injury, sure.
Just a question. We had a finding. Home inspection report failed to note that there was a problem with the steps. A woman fell, broke her ankle. Right. Would that be life safe?
Right.
They could have done.
Consider that life safe.
I mean, I don't know. That's why I bring it up. Just the word life is kind of like.
You see, now it was also explained to me back in 2000 that the committees are formed simply. Because one person cannot make decisions on other people's lives. We need to come to a quorum in a committee. And those types of questions are debated in the committee. And I think that's the system working. Personally, I would say, yes, that's a 5. Okay, but then the other guys may give it a 4, and then we go with the chairman
lawyer,
decides.
Give it a 1. Say it's her fault.
She should know where she was going.
From a legal standpoint, a very important aspect of this is the fact that the committee talks about these things, because at the end of the day, if the committee decides to assign a 5 to something, from my standpoint, ultimately the board votes to go to complaint notice of hearing. I file a complaint. I go into court. I have to explain to a judge why it's a life safety issue. And what I'm going to do is go back to the committee's deliberations, and I'm going to try to get one of you guys to come testify or somebody else on our witness list, and it's going to be the same thing. They're going to look at it, and I just have to be able to articulate how does this justify a 5.
Yeah, sure that it's thoughtful and not just arbitrary.
Right. Well, when it goes through the EAC and you guys talk about it, then it comes to the board and we talk about it.
Right.
You know, and, you know, sometimes they'll be here, the alleger and the respondent will be here, and they, you know, interact too. So yeah. I think there's a lot of levels, you know, that go up. So you're not just arbitrarily saying, hey, take this guy's license away because, you know, he didn't note that the garage door opener didn't close.
And that's exactly why we had to change this, because in the other form, the categories included specific problems with houses, and therefore they were pigeonholed into those numbers. And so we had to get this to be more general and yet specific enough so that we all know where we stand.
And I think what Scott was talking about when you guys do your EAC, I think that's important to let the members know. These are the reasons we come up with these, so that it is defensible down the line. If it needs to be in a court of law, I tell my engineers, if you were sitting on the witness stand, what you did, could you sit there and explain why you did it and justify it? I think, you know, for the EACs, that's the same way. It's like, right. Hey, we give this guy a 5, okay. If you were sitting on the witness stand and you were getting grilled, would you be able to defend the reason? This is why we give it a 5. This, and this.
Right.
And if you can do that, then great.
You make first. Right.
Yeah. I think that's, don't you agree, that's kind of the way to kind of look at these things.
Absolutely. And if I'm going to be asking a judge to recommend revoking somebody's license, I have to understand the basis for doing it. I have to be able to articulate that to the judge in a way that makes sense.
We happy?
Yes.
Oh, good deal. I was kind of, I just brought that up to buy time because I figured Kurt is critical to this process.
Just a quick question. We discussed, this is really agenda item F as well. Should we just note that in the minutes? That essentially was that discussion.
That's the
overview. What's interesting is going through the role delineation study we did for the National Home Inspection Exam, we got into similar discussion regarding the questions on the exam and defining levels of safety and what is required within the exam. Forget severity ratings here, but transfer it also to the actual exam we're asking these guys to take and what this exam form, you know, is going to look like. So,
is there a mirror it
does mirror it quite well, but it is subjective. And I had a group of, you know, 25 people in there, and
25 opinions.
And there were 25 different opinions, and you could make a case for life safety for a ton of different things, right? Because one thing happened to one guy once, right? That's how laws get made.
Right.
So
the reaction then.
Yeah. So anyway,
those classes, those forums still as much fun as they used to be? Are they still as much fun?
Absolutely as much fun.
Are they? You still drinking whiskey at night?
No.
It's not as much fun.
Yeah, I'm looking for a motion, and you have the final version. Can I have the other red one, and I'm going to crunch it up?
Oh, yep.
Just so we don't get any errors. Mm-hmm.
There, I started.
There we go. So could I get a motion on this?
A general motion? Or do you want it explained?
A move to...
as written?
Changes, maybe.
Adopt.
As
you read that document name, and then
as revised?
Revised.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I make a motion that we... Are we recommending this to the board?
Yeah.
I make a motion that we recommend to the board. The BTR Home Inspection Rules and Standards Enforcement Advisory Committee Investigation Severity Ratings Guidelines as revised.
Second.
Okay.
I didn't know if you were done.
Any additional discussion on that? Hearing none, is there any opposition to the passage of the motion? Motion passes. If we could hand that down to Kurt, who is responsible for getting this dialed in. Okay, and if I'm not mistaken, that concludes that. Thank you again, Peter. That was amazing work.
We all did.
Appreciate you doing that, though.
Jeez, me.
Let us know how it is in practice, Doug.
Yeah. If you have any trouble.
Before we move off of that subject, we are teaching this, Doug, on May 1st to the EAC committee members.
Yes.
To explaining it to them.
Yes.
Do we have any that are not showing up that you know?
I'm not sure what the list looks like. I think we've got around 9 or 10 EAC members committed.
Committed? How many EAC members do we have doing this work?
22.
We need better commitment than that. Can we make
it? Send out two notices.
Okay. Make it mandatory?
I can do that.
Maybe send a notice saying that if they don't show up, they may not be called for EAC committee meetings.
And they may want that.
Don't give them an out. Here.
All right, I'm done.
We have Kramer sit on their front doorstep.
You know what you
just take the car down and just throw them in the back.
We're going to need notes on that and document the education, right, for those that aren't here.
At that time. Well, I'm just thinking, in practice, after the educational event, you could maybe seed the next groups with at least one person that had been to it. You know what I mean? So
that's
you don't
a good
have
idea.
So they can sort that out.
So they can make explanations.
Yeah, this time of year, you are never going to get everybody in the room. It's just not going to happen. We're too busy right now.
Which reminds me, don't be looking
like, why am I here so long? What?
Don't be looking for me in June.
Yeah, right.
But if someone is, was not at that meeting, Doug, and they come in 3 months from now and I'm a brand new EAC committee member, is there any kind of documentation to get them up to speed on the rules for EAC and conduct?
Yeah, new EAC members, usually we ask them to come in and meet with us and go through the whole process.
Okay.
Oh,
okay.
Awesome.
Okay, I wasn't sure what the ramp-up plan was. Okay, thank you.
Great. All right. Agenda item 5D is qualifications.
Thank you.
And compensation for a temporary person to review applications.
So I actually, we brought this to the board, and I tried giving like a verbal and got a lot of scrunchy foreheads and confused looks. So I think what we need to do is bring them something. And, Jay Matt had left the meeting, actually. So I was like, where is he now? So I think what we need to do is write something up for the board to look at. Melissa and I can do it, or I'm wondering if, you know, Andy and Jason would like to do it, because you'll be the board members talking about it. What would you prefer?
Jason would not like to do it.
I was thinking Jason would like to do it, but I thought I'd offer anyway.
All right,
Andy,
Jason,
are you interested, or do you want us to do it?
I'd love for you to do it.
Okay, we'll do it.
But I mean, wasn't I essentially seeing it, though?
Yeah, it was written, I thought.
I'm just looking at
last meeting minutes.
You know, D.
So maybe just give them a minute.
Employee per hour per review application, possible issues you got. Oh, no, I'm sorry.
I'm looking at the employee must have completed 250 paid inspections in Arizona, and no disciplinary actions last 3 years, net pay 25.
So I can tell you they had.
Motion carried. So what?
A few different things. They had concerns about, you know, how many people are going to get paid and how are we going to essentially not lose volunteers? Mm. Somebody gets paid, but so why am I volunteering? And two, how is that person chosen? And I don't think the policy really went into details
on those two. The intent was only at extreme peak periods, like March. It's predictable every year that March through June or July, home inspectors are jammed. And so getting volunteers can be trouble for this window of time.
Okay.
And so during those times, perhaps we were going to, under the radar, have somebody like a Randy or somebody who'd been even on this committee, you know, very high-level person doing that kind of work. Not, you know, we still had to set a minimum bar for what they have to be, to even be considered, but that was the intent, not to make it so it's common knowledge among everybody or anything, so.
Okay, well, I'll put it back on the board agenda, and you guys be prepared to kind of talk about it. I think the concern's going to be the not making it common knowledge. If you're going to use public funds to pay somebody, you can't do it under.
Sure.
Under the radar.
Yeah, that's probably a bad choice of words, but I think it was like,
but
do we have a crunch this year yet?
Actually, I think we lost Rob. Because of the volunteers, the number of volunteers we have, we've been moving them forward.
Good. So hopefully, unneeded, except we have historically banged our head on this, and then people go to legislators to complain that this is taking forever, and that is one of the bottlenecks.
Okay, I will write something up, and then if the two board members could be prepared to talk about it and why you're comfortable going forward.
It might not even be needed. And that's another thing to have at your EAC meeting, talking about, you guys are on this. It's more than just coming to these meetings and doing these, you know, evaluations. I mean, you're expected to review applications and things like that, too. Because you get a bigger pool, you're going to spread them out a little bit more. And, you know, if everyone only had to do one a week or something, or, you know, one every 2 weeks or something, it wouldn't be that big of a burden, I wouldn't think. As opposed to poor Peter getting 10 on his desk at a time.
They don't do that anymore.
Which he's very happy about. So, Kurt, would you put this on the board's agenda for this month so I will be forced into a corner to make sure I get something prepared for them?
Certainly.
Thank you.
Yeah, this is in SB 1045, too.
Right.
So it is only for emergencies because we had so much trouble with applicants in a bind, and that's one of two bottlenecks. The bill took care of both. So,
and it says employee. It's really a subcontractor.
It's whatever the agency wants to do.
It's really going to be a 1099 type person, is it not?
What we would, it doesn't make sense to employ somebody on the staff, so we would use like a temp.
Temporary.
Yeah, and we're just wanting to give you discretion to do it. I don't even know that we need to approve the temp agency.
That's the way to put it. Discretion to hire a temp agency to aid in it, because that's what we talked about. Like, if Randy wanted to do it, he'd have to go and hire on with ABC Temp. You guys would hire ABC Temp, they would assign Randy. He would do it for however long you needed it, and then it would be done.
And we don't need to be the ones to approve the temp agency, do we?
Actually, the state has a contract.
Yeah, I was going to say. Yeah.
So we would go with the state contract.
I'd say, who do you think anyway?
But I like the way you put it, that the state will contract with the temp agency.
And we just wanted to be sure that the guy was qualified for this committee.
Okay. I will get it back on the agenda.
Great. That requires no action.
I did speak with Brian Grant on it. He was not interested, by the way. Did you speak with Randy?
Yeah, I did, but he ended up having some health problems.
Yeah, Randy got some serious health problems, I think.
So that puts that in jeopardy. But
we do want to reach out to one or two more. I'm just thinking about who we could reach out to.
There's a number of people. I mean, there's a number of people.
It doesn't have to be someone retired, right? There's no reason.
No, it doesn't. But Dan Harris is semi-retired. He's up in Prescott now, and he would be.
Dan would be great.
Okay.
So there's actually quite a few.
So we'll keep that on the agenda. So 5B and 5D, just to save a step for what's coming at 8, just so you know. And the next item is 5E. Public submitted question regarding changes to R430-101 regarding the parallel inspections definition in the notice of proposed rulemaking.
So I was not involved in this discussion. Keith, and I've forgotten Keith's last name,
Smith.
Had called Melissa, and essentially I have tried, she's not recalling the details of the discussion particularly that well. She thought he was going to come and ask his questions. My memory of what Melissa told me was that he was concerned about the cost of parallel inspections. However, like I said, this is third-hand knowledge, so I don't know that there's anything we need to do with it since he's not here to ask us questions.
Well, it's on the agenda, so can we talk about cost of inspections? Cost of parallels?
And just before, I just kind of let you know that his question and comments did not come within the period of time open for the rulemaking. That doesn't mean we ignore it, but it has a different weight.
Do you know how he approached Melissa with this? Was it an email or a phone call?
I didn't have anything to go back and look at.
He runs a school and provides parallels.
Right.
So it's odd to me that he would be concerned about the cost of parallel. He has quite a bit of control over that.
And I know he's got a 38 number, which means that he has all the qualifications to do this.
He does, yeah.
All right. So
his concern is about the cost.
Yeah, but why would the cost raise? Unless we monopolized it, reduce it.
I don't want to speculate. I don't want to spend a lot of time speculating what he might have.
We don't want to talk about the cost. Okay.
Well, no. That's one thing. Talking about the cost is one thing, but spending time speculating on what he might be concerned about.
Well, not what he's concerned with, but he did open the door to why would this raise the cost or why would this lower the cost? That's all I wanted.
Why would what?
Okay, this is what I've got. He specifically liked to discuss the proposed amendment to the parallel inspections definition R4-30-101. He thinks it will dramatically increase the cost of training.
Because we put a standard of 250 or something on?
That's got to be it. But maybe we should respond to him and ask him to come to the next meeting.
Well, but it was on the agenda this time.
Has validity anyway.
I mean, you know, he had the there was an official public, comment section. He didn't do that. Then he sends an email and then doesn't show up to explain. He says, I want to discuss this. Well, okay. What do you got to say? Oh, nothing. I mean, we can't just keep for one guy who can't
He has a bit of a history of this kind of thing anyway. So
it was on the agenda. He didn't show up to
discuss. That's right, hashing out a problem with your brother at his gravestone. So...
Yeah, when it goes to GIRC, he will have an opportunity then to express his concerns. We'll just be prepared to respond.
He could come to a future meeting here if he likes.
Would these be approved by the board, or have they already been approved by the board?
They've been approved by the board.
And then after they go to GIRC, is that it then?
Right. So okay. It's unlikely the board would choose to withdraw the entire rule package and make a change right now.
Wow.
We could put it on the board agenda and they could consider his concern in the future, perhaps. Or, as I said, he can come to GIRC and address his concerns and we can respond to them.
Right. I think he had a fair opportunity numerous times to...
The system gives him opportunity.
Yeah.
Okay, so sounds like there's nothing we can do with 5E, and we struck 5F, is that correct?
You already talked about it.
Yep.
Great. And then now's the time for the director's report. Do you have any of that data that we usually ask for or anything to report?
Yeah. Melissa thought I would have the report to give you, but it's not here. What I can tell you is we are considering parting ways with the database vendor and going with a new resource. We've continued to have problems that came to the point where he threatened to turn over our data if we didn't pay him money for services he hasn't provided. Trust level has been lost.
Hmm. And we did pull all the data back. Microsoft helped pull all the data back to the old system.
Great.
That doesn't mean we're back to square one. There are two other options that we are looking at that would let us move forward. You know, we have three really important issues: credit card payments, online renewals. People can look at board orders online. An example of the problem with the vendors, they wanted to charge us extra to put consent agreements online because we called them board orders and they didn't somehow recognize that as being consent agreements being a board order. Scott's saying I can't be going there this much. Unfortunately, I don't have the rest of Melissa's report financially. We're right on track for the year. I don't have the numbers to give you, but we'd be happy to send them to you.
Okay. Great.
thank you.
Thank you for that. Next item is committee chairman's report, and just I do take some calls on what's important to those in the industry, and without going into specifics or anything, as far as what we can do about it, maybe we can at least talk about it to see if it belongs on the future agenda. But it actually came in from Paul. We got wind of it. There are home builders out there doing some things to keep home inspectors out because we don't exactly assist in their ability to sell homes. You know, we're finding things and all that. They're taking some steps that are kind of putting them sideways with what our requirements are, and they've done it. It's happened before in the past where they would write a contract that we would never sign. So I don't know if there's precedent for the executive director of this agency to go talk to the registrar of contractors or what legally can be done to get to some sort of common ground where the public has the right to a home inspection, the builders are not locking us out with these onerous contracts. So I don't know if we want to put that on a future agenda item or if that should just be something I talk to Melissa about or Paul talk.
Yeah,
one.
A future agenda. Let's put it on a future agenda item.
Because I think we can elaborate on the different pieces of it and dig
flush
down
it
a little
out,
more
yeah.
because there's a number of components at it, both the requirements the builder puts on the home buying consumer and the requirements the builder puts on the home inspector.
Right.
And even to the point where,
the
I mean, what I sent you, the builder's requiring us to quote the code reference when we make a call in a report. The code reference. We're not code inspectors. You know, so there's a bunch of these things, and it's more than one builder.
They will put on there that we have to have $300,000 in auto insurance coverage and must name them as an additional insured when we drive on a public street and stay on a public street the entire time. We do not enter their property.
And this is in the registered contractor.
This is what builders do to get rid of us. They make a contract that we have to sign that we're going to do that.
Okay, it's not a registered contractor's law. It's what's built.
They're the owners between the builders and the home public, inspector, really.
The public or the home inspector. They're using right. both methods now. Right. So it's a worsening condition. Whatever we can do about it, we want to be there for the public. They deserve to be able to have a home inspection on it. New builds are actually, they are building problems right in. I have plenty of photos. I have life safety problems that builders build into property.
And this came up at the last Saturday's meeting of the AZ-ASHI, as far as a number of concerns also. And it was thought that at one point Melissa had agreed to speak with the ROC director, but maybe if we put it on the agenda, David, and we give Melissa enough ammunition, she'll feel comfortable, you know, knocking on that door and at least starting the discussion.
Okay. Does that sound like the best? Well, we can talk about the best path at that point. Okay, then the other thing that I hear out there in the world continuously and have for a long time is when we talk about the report checklist supplement being changed once a year, be sure and check it. Usually the new version will come out in January, and you try and get people to review it each year. I always hear that they would want to see any changes in red or somehow noted, which is a little bit silly because they don't know what any of the versions said anyway. They should review the entire document. Mm-hmm. But that is a constant request, and I don't know if there's precedent for that either. It's a question.
I don't know if we've done it, but we can certainly do it.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. That comes up.
Just an internal.
I think it'd be nice if they actually read it all the way through and approve it.
I do too.
The next year that nothing was changed.
And they could always compare it themselves to the two different versions if needed.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just wanted to state it as a, I hear it all the time, all the time.
Because if we put it out in the draft, people will think it's not done, right? We put it on a draft format.
Or if you put it in red, that's all they focus on.
Right.
And they don't even know what the rest of it's.
Right.
I thought we could just put a note that we're asking you to review the entire document rather than, so you understand the context of changes, something.
And you could just tell me to shut up, because I'm just bringing it up because I hear it all the time.
Okay.
So that's about it. That's about all I had exposure to this last term. So the future agenda items are 5B and 5D, and I want to mention that we're kind of in that, we're nearing the summer period, so a couple months from now would be our normal, so we're at April, May, June. We typically take some time in the summer due to vacations and that where we'll pause for a bit. And I don't know that 5B and 5D are essential items. One is just the rules change update, which you could always push out to members of the committee if there's
some. Yeah, we can just let you know.
Yeah. And then the temporary person qualifications, I mean, there's just nothing here, so.
No, except for the new one you put on, trying to talk to, get Melissa to talk
oh,
to the
builder
ROC.
One.
Yeah, build it.
Yeah, so do we want to state that as a future agenda item right now, like how that would be worded, like?
Concerns with builder requirements, concern with home inspector builder requirements, I don't know.
Review consideration and possible action on the following, or approve, modify, or okay, yeah.
Home builder requirements, concerns with home builder requirements.
Builder inspection requirements, maybe.
Yeah, we'll make it pretty broad, so you don't
have to
to talk about one specific, kind of like we did today.
Home builder, home inspector relationships.
That's real broad.
Would you be willing, Paul, to spearhead that a little bit? Just offending things? Thank you. Do you have that well enough to throw it in the future, Jim?
Yes, but concern with home builder inspection requirements.
I like that a lot. Okay. So future meetings. So So do we want to say like August or September?
August or September, it works for me.
August is back to school, but we're all out of that phase, right?
I'm back in it.
You really are?
Okay. We adopted two little girls. So.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah.
Very cool. Well, let's go late. Well, late August kind of messes up our norm here a little.
Do whatever you want. I'm here all month.
Do we want to tackle the builder? Is the builder thing rise to the level of?
I don't think there's a level of immediacy with it. It seems like it's been ongoing for years anyway. So I don't think it's a reason to push our meeting up. Put it that way.
We'll just have to lie and cheat like we've been doing all these years.
And we can always reach out to Melissa on, and get a ball rolling without the committee's full involvement.
Yeah.
So do you want to say early September?
Works for me.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Today's a Wednesday? Yeah. So we could say the 5th or the 12th?
We're switching these to Wednesdays? Normally we do them on Tuesdays.
Tuesday or Thursday was the norm before. Yeah. I'm kind of open all over that area, I think. Although,
yeah.
Want to say that... Actually, Wednesday works good for me now, if that's okay. Would the 5th or the 12th work for
anyone? Both worked for me.
Yeah. Both worked for me.
12th might be better, or stay away from the weekend.
Yeah, 5th is Labor Day.
Yeah.
Oh, it is. Oh, that's right.
So maybe 12.
Let's go with the 12th, yeah. September 12th.
Okay.
Does that work for staff?
I won't be here, but Melissa will be.
Oh, okay. We'll miss you.
Well, I'm committing Melissa.
Since she committed you today?
Usual time?
September 12th it is.
Mm-hmm. 9:30.
Same time, same channel. And I'm taking off my note about comments in red, so I'll forget for sure by then.
Mr. Chairman,
that might be it.
I'll make a motion that we adjourn.
Second.
No opposition. Any opposition to that?
Tempted.
Hearing none, meeting is adjourned at 10:50.